Most of us crave authentic relationships. But how do we develop friendships that transcend superficiality and go beneath the surface to deal with issues that truly matter? Today on Insight for Living, you'll hear Chuck Swindoll introduce a new series called Dropping Your Guard. As the name implies, we'll be looking for ways to cultivate friendships, particularly at church, where we're willing to let people see our flaws, where we admit our fears and weaknesses, and where we're loved anyway. The series was delivered to Chuck's church congregation during a season of dramatic growth, and we'll take ample time to read from Scripture, Exodus chapter 13.
There's an amazing analogy between the Hebrew people in the days of Moses and Christians around the world today. Just try putting yourself in the sandals of all those Hebrew men and women and children when they came to the Red Sea with the fast-approaching Egyptian army behind them. And I'm sure every one of us could probably relate in some way to that terrifying experience. Change is a word that excites some people, but truth be told, it scares most others to death. You may be in that latter category. Today, as I read a passage from Exodus 13 and on into chapter 14, I want you to do something special for me. I want you to envision how you would react in a similar, terrifying experience. Try to feel what they must have felt. Listen closely as I read some excerpts from Exodus chapter 13 and then all of Exodus chapter 14 from the New Living Translation. Exodus 13 begins, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Dedicate to me every firstborn among the Israelites, the first offspring to be born of both humans and animals belongs to me.' So Moses said to the people, 'This is a day to remember forever, the day you left Egypt, the place of your slavery. Today the Lord has brought you out by the power of his mighty hand. Remember, eat no food containing yeast. On this day in early spring, in the month of Aviv, you have been set free. You must celebrate this event in this month each year, after the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Hivites, and Jebusites. He swore to your ancestors that he would give you this land, a land flowing with milk and honey.'" Now verse 8. "On the seventh day, you must explain to your children, 'I am celebrating what the Lord did for me when I left Egypt.' This annual festival will be a visible sign to you, like a mark branded on your hand or your forehead. Let it remind you always to recite this teaching of the Lord: 'With a strong hand, the Lord rescued you from Egypt.' So observe the decree of this festival at the appointed time each year. This is what you must do when the Lord fulfills the promise he swore to you and to your ancestors, when he gives you the land where the Canaanites now live." And now verse 16, "This ceremony will be like a mark branded on your hand or your forehead. It is a reminder that the power of the Lord's mighty hand brought us out of Egypt." When Pharaoh finally let the people go, God did not lead them along the main road that runs through Philistine territory, even though that was the shortest route to the promised land. God said, "If the people are faced with a battle, they might change their minds and return to Egypt." So God led them in a roundabout way through the wilderness toward the Red Sea. Thus the Israelites left Egypt like an army ready for battle. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for Joseph had made the sons of Israel swear to do this. He said, "God will certainly come to help you. When he does, you must take my bones with you from this place." The Israelites left Succoth and camped at Etham, on the edge of the wilderness. The Lord went ahead of them. He guided them during the day with a pillar of cloud, and He provided light at night with a pillar of fire. This allowed them to travel by day or by night. And the Lord did not remove the pillar of cloud or pillar of fire from its place in front of the people. Now, chapter 14 begins with verse 1. Then the Lord gave these instructions to Moses. Order the Israelites to turn back and camp by Pi-hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea. Camp there along the shore, across from Baal-zephon. Then Pharaoh will think the Israelites are confused. They are trapped in the wilderness. And once again, I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will chase after you. I have planned this in order to display my glory through Pharaoh and his whole army. After this, the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. So the Israelites camped there as they were told. When word reached the king of Egypt that the Israelites had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds. What have we done, letting all those Israelite slaves get away? They asked. So Pharaoh harnessed his chariot and called up his troops. He took with him 600 of Egypt's best chariots, along with the rest of the chariots of Egypt, each with its commander. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, so he chased after the people of Israel, who had left with fists raised in defiance. The Egyptians chased after them with all the forces in Pharaoh's army, all his horses and chariots, his charioteers, and his troops. The Egyptians caught up with the people of Israel as they were camped beside the shore near Pi-hahiroth, across from Baal-zephon. As Pharaoh approached, the people of Israel looked up and panicked when they saw the Egyptians overtaking them. They cried out to the Lord, and they said to Moses, "Why did you bring us out here to die in the wilderness? Weren't there enough graves for us in Egypt? What have you done to us? Why did you make us leave Egypt? Didn't we tell you this would happen while we were still in Egypt? We said, 'Leave us alone. Let us be slaves to the Egyptians. It's better to be a slave in Egypt than a corpse in the wilderness.'" But Moses told the people, "Don't be afraid. Just stand still and watch the Lord rescue you today. The Egyptians you see today will never be seen again. The Lord Himself will fight for you. Just stay calm." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the people to get moving. Pick up your staff and raise your hand over the sea. Divide the water so the Israelites can walk through the middle of the sea on dry ground. And I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they will charge in after the Israelites. My great glory will be displayed through Pharaoh and his troops, his chariots, and his charioteers. When my glory is displayed through them, all Egypt will see my glory and know that I am the Lord." Then the angel of God, who had been leading the people of Israel, moved to the rear of the camp. The pillar of cloud also moved from the front and stood behind them. The cloud settled between the Egyptian and Israelite camps. As darkness fell, the cloud turned to fire, lighting up the night. But the Egyptians and Israelites did not approach each other all night. Then Moses raised his hand over the sea, and the Lord opened up a path through the water with a strong east wind. The wind blew all that night, turning the seabed into dry land. So the people of Israel walked through the middle of the sea on dry ground, with walls of water on each side. Then the Egyptians, all of Pharaoh's horses, chariots and charioteers chased them into the middle of the sea. But just before dawn, the Lord looked down on the Egyptian army from the pillar of fire and cloud, and he threw their forces into total confusion. He twisted their chariot wheels, making their chariots difficult to drive. Let's get out of here, away from these Israelites, the Egyptians shouted. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt. When all the Israelites had reached the other side, the Lord said to Moses, raise your hand over the sea again. Then the waters will rush back and cover the Egyptians and their chariots and charioteers. So as the sun began to rise, Moses raised his hand over the sea, and the water rushed back into its usual place. The Egyptians tried to escape, but the Lord swept them into the sea. Then the waters returned and covered all the chariots and charioteers, the entire army of Pharaoh. Of all the Egyptians who had chased the Israelites into the sea, not a single one survived. But the people of Israel had walked through the middle of the sea on dry ground as the water stood up like a wall on both sides. That is how the Lord rescued Israel from the hand of the Egyptians that day. And the Israelites saw the bodies of the Egyptians washed up on the seashore. When the people of Israel saw the mighty power that the Lord had unleashed against the Egyptians, they were filled with awe before him. They put their faith in the Lord and in his servant Moses.
We're reading from Exodus 13 as we begin this new series called Dropping Your Guard. You can find helpful resources by going to insightworld.org. And now Chuck Swindoll on Digging Deeper, Risking Change.
When you've been away for 3 weeks of vacation and you come back and there's a surprise part in the service that you don't expect, and the chairman of the church comes up and reads from 1 Peter chapter 5 on what it means to be a good pastor, it's a little bit threatening, to be honest with you. Noticed as I drove up that my name is about worn off of my parking spot, and truly this morning my key didn't quite fit the lock, and I thought they'd changed them on me, and I thought my days are numbered around this place. Just for the sake of curiosity, and I don't want you to applaud or in any way make a big deal out of it, I think it would be interesting for all of us to just look around and see the people who happened to have been here that Sunday, August 29, 1971, when I began my ministry here in Fullerton. If you were in the congregation that day, would you kindly stand and remain there maybe about 5 seconds and let the folks take a look at you? It's not only remarkable that they were here then, what's really remarkable is that they're still around. Thank you. You may be seated. It was so different then. It was so simple. We're all swept with a bit of nostalgia today, surprised though we may be with the words that were said. I certainly was. It was a single morning service. Remember those days? A single evening service. You had a place to sit, a place to park. You had time. You knew each person, pretty much. We numbered 700 or 800 back then. We had a comfortable place to worship. If you had a family back then, think of their ages. 10 years ago, it's different, isn't it? Our family ranged in age from 1 to 9. They were all in elementary school. Amazing. I wore a black suit, a black tie, black socks, black shoes. I looked like Johnny Cash that Sunday, as I recall. I was very formal because I was scared to death, to tell you the truth. In fact, Wally Norling was back with me before we went in together, and he looked at me and saw how I was dressed and frowned. He said, "Where in the world are you going, Swindoll? A funeral?" That was the beginning of pressure in this ministry back then. As I recall, my first week here on the job, I got a letter from Eddie Dunn, who was a great Trojan fan, and he sent me a USC beanie and banner and told me to wear it every Sunday. See, those are things you don't know about that go on behind the scenes in the serious life of a pastor. He warned me against a guy leading a cult named Alquist who followed the teaching of the Bruins. And that pulpit committee, I'll tell you, they were the men that had guts. They had incredible vision and faith, determination beyond my own, I assure you. Why in the world would I leave a safe and secure and predictable nest in north central Texas to come out here? I still ask that every once in a while when I think about how much I miss the Cowboys and significant events in my life. Somebody told me, "Do you know why there's a hole in the top of the Cowboys stadium?" And I said, "No, I don't know." They said, "So God can watch. That's his favorite team." I'll never forget, I had never been to Fullerton. That's why I didn't get off the plane. I asked John Watson if they had smog in Fullerton. And he's a marvelous man. He just drips with integrity. And he looked at me with the blankest look, and he said, "Smog?" I believed him. I thought smog went around Fullerton, and it didn't even bother us here. I could go on and on, but I want to pause now and thank you very seriously for several things. I want to thank you for loving me and all the Swindolls. I want to thank you for believing in us. I want to thank you for not trying to make me walk on water. I thank you for forgiving us of mistakes. I thank you for overlooking our imperfections and for continuing to do that. For we have failed and we will fail again. For not expecting of us perfection, but simply commitment. I want to thank you also for letting go of the enjoyable and the comfortable and the easy, relaxed setting that you enjoyed 10 years ago, and for flexing with me in what God has done. I remember reading Churchill a number of years ago. I'm enamored of the man. I deeply admire where he stood when all hell was breaking loose in London and his dear, beloved England. He stood fast. And toward the end, when it seemed obvious that they would win, but they would have to retool and rebuild, and it would be a whole new London, a whole new England, he made that eloquent statement, "This has been our finest hour." I think the past 10 years have been ours. The Fullerton Church stands out in my mind as one of the most enviable pastorates a man can enjoy and share with a group of colleagues on the staff who are second to none, who make my role so delightful. I thank you for letting us build a staff and for having the vision and the trust in me to trust us when we went into uncharted waters. Today, I start officially my 11th year. And as I do, I feel God still has a purpose for my remaining here and being here. If ever I sense that it is time for me not to be here, you'll have no difficulty with my leaving. I'm not making any prediction or any announcement today, but I want to relieve your mind for fear you might think I have a blind spot that I claim this is mine forever. You are not mine. You are God's. You're God's people whom God has raised up. I'd love to claim you as mine because you would be my choice. But my only mine is my family. They have my first commitment under that of Jesus Christ. And if I ever sense that I've come to the place where I'm holding back, or I really should not try to stay at the helm of leadership, I will immediately and instantly resign. Because my life of obedience requires that. I hope God allows me to complete my entire future ministry here, but He may not. I'm not flirting with some other ministry or playing with another church. Every year or two I get an offer, and it's encouraging to know somebody else might want you. But I assure you, I am totally satisfied here. I'm contented almost to the point at times of feeling a bit guilty about how happy I am here. It hasn't been without its tests, nor without the test in the future, but that's part of walking with God, isn't it? During these past several weeks, I have been on vacation, but I've been thinking about the close analogy between our situation and that of the ancient Hebrews. And I'd like to have you look with me today to begin several messages, brief though the series may be, several messages on this analogy between the people of Israel and our own situation today in this congregation. Exodus 13 is where I have my Bible opened to. And I'll give you a little background so you'll kind of appreciate where we're coming from. And let me let you know at the very beginning of this message that it's just kind of a part of a broader message that'll take longer time to preach, and so we'll take up with it next time. The background is, of course, 430 years of slavery. The people of Israel have been enslaved to the Egyptians, and the yoke has become increasingly more difficult to bear. As you Bible students will know, Moses came on the scene, and the more he was emphatic that God would have the Hebrews released from Pharaoh's yoke, the greater the burden became, until it was literally unbearable, and they cried out against Moses and unto God for relief and for deliverance. God led in that way through Moses, an 80-year-old man who didn't want the job. He didn't volunteer for it. He, in fact, resisted it to the point of blasphemy. Had he waited any longer, I really seriously wonder if God would have allowed him to live. He had to be the man because he was God's choice. And so he came and he led the Exodus, which was a miraculous event. Over four centuries of slavery, suddenly over as God led the people free.
Digging Deeper, Risking Change. That's the title Chuck Swindoll selected for his opening message in the series, Dropping Your Guard. We'll hear a closing comment from Chuck in just a moment. But here on this first day in the new series, it's a good time to remind you that you can purchase all 12 sermons by calling us or going online. If you're listening in the United States, just mention that you'd like to own the study called Dropping Your Guard when you call 1-800-772-8888 or go online to insightworld.org. We'll be talking about developing healthy relationships in the church family in this new series. But how do you handle those inevitable moments when you've been hurt? Well, Chuck preached a message called Doing Right When You've Been Done Wrong. And if you've never contacted Insight for Living, we'd like to send you a free copy. Be prepared to jot down our contact information in just a moment. And be sure to call to request the free CD, Doing Right When You've Been Done Wrong. We often hear from listeners who express their gratitude to Chuck and their respect for the manner in which he finds practical application from the Old Testament. At Insight for Living, we're intent on helping you discover those life-changing principles on your own. Chuck?
Say, when was the last time you dug up a treasure from the Old Testament and applied its wisdom to your life? Sometimes we avoid the unfamiliar pages of Joshua through Esther, commonly called the historical books, because we sort of get lost in the ancient record. Without proper context, the cultural customs feel entirely disconnected from our lives today. So let me assure you, these books are filled with relevant insight for your life and for your life today. In fact, we've drawn practical applications from each chapter in the 12 historical books of the Old Testament. You'll find a brief paragraph for each chapter written in this new book, Insight's Bible Application Guide, Joshua through Esther, a life lesson from every chapter. I urge you to make these discoveries on your own. I'm excited about that. This book was prepared with you in mind. So, please, contact Insight for Living today. A copy of Insight's Bible Application Guide is set aside just for you.
This book is yours when you give a donation of any amount to Insight for Living. It comes with our thanks for your financial support. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org. We don't want the amount of your donation to become a barrier for receiving this important Bible study tool, so you determine the appropriate size of your gift. When you give, request Insight's Bible Application Guide, Joshua through Esther, a life lesson from every chapter. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. And online, you can make your request at insight.org. I'm Dave Spiker. More from Chuck Swindoll's new series, Dropping Your Guard, Tuesday, here on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Digging Deeper, Risking Change, Part 1, was copyrighted in 1981, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2013 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.